You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Your body is unique. So why would you settle for a weight loss plan that's one size fits all? Noom is the weight management program that takes into account your biology to build a custom plan just for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com and check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hello, welcome to Good One, a podcast about jokes. I'm your host, Vulture Senior Editor, Jesse David Fox. Each episode, a comedian comes on to play a clip of one of their jokes and then discusses how they wrote it and how it fits into what they're trying to do with their comedy. Today's guest is Yvonne Orji. To prepare to interview people, I usually listen to and read other interviews they've done. You get a sense of what they like to talk about and also what they get asked about over and over. In doing so, I sometimes get to see a phenomenon I always love, which is when the interviewer talks to the person as if they are the character they play on a TV show or movie. They'll be like, "I can't believe you cheated on Derek." And the interviewee will be like, sorry? I bring this up because this happens so much to Yvonne, who is best known for playing Molly on Insecure, which just wrapped up its fourth season. I get it. The role is iconic, but I think an equally big factor is how unknown she was before getting the role. She didn't even have an agent yet. But little did people know, Yvonne has been performing stand-up since 2006, and was even handpicked by Chris Rock to open for him in 2017. With her new HBO special, Mama, I Made It, Yvonne is ready to show people who the real person behind the character is. Beyond her stand-up, which is so good, it's joyous and filled with hyper-specific, richly drawn characters, the special also includes documentary footage of Yvonne returning to Nigeria, the country where she was born and briefly raised before moving to Maryland at age 6. Using documentary footage has been a trend in stand-up recently, but it really, really works here. Yvonne's impression of her family members are so funny, but it's another level to then meet those people and see how spot-on she is. The joke Yvonne chose to focus on is about a pivotal, life-changing moment. The moment when she realized, well, I'll let her tell it. So, here is Yvonne Orji.
Man, but I can't front y'all. I am living my best black life right now. Recently, I got a chance to do something I really didn't think I'd be able to do, y'all. I enrolled in auto pay. Your finances to be like, hold up, you want your check when? On the 12th? Nigga, then take it then. Hey, it did not always used to be that way. I'm telling you, the years of struggle, I used to have team pep talks with myself. All right, everybody, huddle in. All right, it's Friday. Accounts is looking kind of low. Okay. We got $47 to make it through the weekend, all right? So listen, here's what we're gonna do. It's Friday. We can go Chipotle, but no guac, okay? No guac. Get that out your mind. The way it's looking, you can put 7 on pump 11. All right, break on 3. Boom. You got it mapped out. You know how this is gonna end. You go to sleep feeling good about your choices, your decisions. You forget that there was one payment pending. You go to sleep. You wake up to all these alerts. Negative 35, negative. You call the bank, Matt, hello? No, I don't know no sprints. I check the box, nigga, uncheck it then. These overdraft fees are the trick of the enemy. That's what they are. That's not the will of God for my life. I rebuke them. Anybody here, I rebuke the spirit of overdraft fees. I release the freedom of auto pay for your children's 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 children. Girl, you better receive. You better... No, but it's real serious. It's funny because, when you were dating before, you'd be like, you may have found out what his credit score is, girl. Not me. I'm like, I'm sorry, are you on auto pay or where are we in our life? Okay.
So I'm here with the comedian behind the joke you just heard, Yvonne Orji. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Before we dive into the joke itself, I wanted to hear more about the sort of truth behind it. I believe around 2009, you moved to New York to really try to make an entertainment, and you got insecure in 2015. So can you describe sort of what your financial low was or your financial struggles at the beginning of your career? You know, what did that feel like?
Well, how low is low? Because that's where I was. Like, I have friends who were like, girl, I don't have any money. And then I turn around and they're like, yes, I think I'm just going to spend a month in Thailand. I'm like, wait, when you say you have no money, it's very different than what I say I have no money. And they're like, no, I was broke. I'm like, but how did you get to Thailand? Like, was Spirit Air giving dollar tickets that I don't know about? And so that wasn't my testimony. Mine was literally like, if anything costs above $5, I might not make it. And so there was many years of sacrificing the dream while getting a temp job and then being like, I'm unhappy at this temp job because while I can eat and pay my rent, I'm not fulfilled as an artist. So I quit. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, ah, dang, I'm now broke. You know, so it's just like the sing song. And then finally, I just had to lean into, you know what? Girl, you're just going to have to struggle for a little bit, but it'll all be worth it because you know that this is like, you know, sometimes there's you just got to go through the fire to grow through the fire. You just mm-hmm. have to go through yeah. it. And, you know, I found myself at probably one of my lowest points in New York, and I wanted Two Bros Pizza. Which, if you're in New York, you know it feeds the homeless and the artist because it's a dollar slice pizza. And then if you want to get real fancy, you can get a can of soda for 75 cents. It's like $2.75 is all you need for a meal. And I was living in like Far Rockaway, Queens, and I didn't have enough money to get the pizza and soda and have like round trip subway fare. And I was just like, yo, I don't have $7. I'm grown with 2 degrees and Sally Mae is out here trying to get all my money. And it just was like a very low point. And it was in that moment that God like deposited onto me, like all of his plans for me. And I just remember being like, this sounds really good, sir. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. However, what I really would have liked better in this moment is some food. And so, you know, to get to the point then, I think, wait, when did I sign up to AutoPay? Like 2019, maybe, like comfortably 2019 to get to a point where like, yeah, you could take all this money and I won't even know. That was like, yo, I think I've made it. Like, I think I've made it.
Can you walk me through that decision? You know, how did it feel when you saw that was an option and you're like, what was that decision being like? Yeah, I think I can pull this off.
Well, here's the thing. Like, even when like I now live in LA, you know, there are certain bills that got you, right? Like I remember my Geico bill. They were like, you can save X amount of dollars on your bill if you sign up for auto pay. And I'm like, but you know, you got to find a cheat code, right? So it was just like, I signed up for it, but like they would take the money out, like say like the 15th. And I was just like, ooh, I got to get off auto pay on the 14th. And so then they gave you like a grace of like, 3 days to pay the bill. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I know I'll have it in 3 days. And then like, I would pay it and then get back on AutoPay so I could still save the money. So it was just like all of these things. So I was double dutching on AutoPay. So I wasn't comfortably on it. And then I'll never forget, like I bought my home in 2019 And to get my bank loan, they were like, we'll give you this great rate if you agree to have your mortgage on auto pay. And I was like, my mortgage? Like, wait a minute. Like, that was the moment. That was when I was like, oh, these are big girl bills. Like, wait, and you just want to take it out every month? Like, at the same time? And it was like, okay. I think then in that moment, I was like, yo, I've made it. Like, my bill, my mortgage is on auto pay. There is nothing anyone else can say to me.
Were you surprised at how sort of powerful that felt to make that decision?
I think it was, because here's the thing. I'm not so far removed from the I couldn't afford $2 worth of pizza to not understand the magnitude of that moment. It was like, yo, God, being in entertainment wasn't even a dream that I had for myself. And then you gave it to me. And now you're not only just giving me that dream, you're giving me the like all the bells and whistles that come with fulfilling that dream. And I think it always it gets me in awe. It's just like, how did we get here? Because I remember when we weren't here, because that wasn't so long ago. And the fact that we're here now, it's humbling. What it is it's very, it's humbling. You know, there's a Israel Houghton has a song like, who am I that you are mindful of me? Who am I that you care for me? And I like those words like echo, like who I'm like, I'm not that special. Like, who am I that you would think to give me this life? And not just the financial thing of this life, but just this life where like I am literally my ancestors' wildest dreams. Like, who, how did I get here? And I'm grateful.
Yeah. When did you then realize you wanted to talk about it on stage? You know, what did you see in this that you thought, oh, there might be something funny here?
Well, because, I mean, listen, if you hang around any artist any amount of time, you know the struggle is real, right? And, you know, for a lot of us, we've all gotten got by that one bill that we forgot was on auto pay. We've all gotten got like, the overdraft fees. How did... I missed out on the date. You know, like you just, you know, you got sloppy. You forgot you had a bill on auto pay, or you forgot like there was a payment pending. Cause you know, like when you're counting every penny, you're like an accountant. You're just like, wait, I know this. Okay. The check came. Okay. I put it in. It's probably going to take about 2 or 3 days to clear in the bank. And then you're making plans for when it clears. Sometimes you get a little overzealous, like, okay, well, I can do this because I know it's going to go in 3 days, and you forget, like, Monday's a holiday. I didn't account for that, or something happens. And we've all been there when that overdraft fee kind of sneaks up on us. And that's when I knew. For me, it wasn't so much like everyone's going to get this joke. For me, it was just like, yo, I know this feeling. And if anybody, even if you don't know this feeling, you know somebody who's had this feeling. Like, that was when I was just like, more than the funny of it, because in the moment, there's nothing funny about it, but it's just the relatability of like, yo, we have, yes, understood. We have been there. That is liberty and justice for all, to be able to, to be able to just like roam around our finances freely and just be like, yeah, take it on the 12th, whenever. Yeah. The 13th, whatever. The 2nd. Sure. Like, it'll be there. I'm like, well, that is a privilege and an honor.
So then once you know there's something there that is, let's say, compelling to you, you know, how do you sort of evolve the ideas? How do you sort of actually write? You know, what does writing look like? I think for comedians, it can mean so many different things. How do you sort of then like actually like, let me think about what I would say on stage to sort of capture this feeling?
Well, you know, I think based on the trajectory of my career, saying, you know, I just did something that I didn't think I'd be able to do, the audience is expecting, oh my gosh, you just booked a role with insert like super A-lister here. Oh my gosh, she just landed deal here. Like, they're expecting something grandiose. And for me, it's the twist, or the plot twist is, this is something big for me, because when you've come from like, I couldn't afford $2 pizza to like, my bills on auto pay, like that's a big win. That's a win. But it's also a win that like anybody who's not in entertainment can have. And so it's like writing that joke of like, I'm gonna show them my right hand, but I'm gonna give them my left instead.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew like, okay, there's something here. And then the audience is like, it's the the thing they weren't expecting is what makes them laugh. But then the reality of the thing they got is also what makes them laugh. So you're kind of getting the double laughter of the realization and then the understanding of like, yo, no. That is a big moment. No. That is, she's right though, you know?
Is that a thing? Will you like write it down or type it up? Or is it sort of like you have an idea of a thing, you'll start saying it on stage and sort of go from there?
I write everything down. If a joke is not written down in my notes, then I lose it. Like I write everything down like verbatim. Like normally a seed will come to me. I'll get in the shower. I'll act it out. Like the shower, like my water bill is probably through the roof because I'm like acting it out in the shower and I'm like, okay, well, how can that go? And then I go out and like, I'm like dripping, trying to like get the towel around me, grab my phone and like, I gotta like write it all out. And then I look at it and I'm like, no, that's too long. Then I edit it. And then when I get it to a place where I like it, I'll casually drop it in conversation to see just how like how it works. Because you never want someone to know like you're testing a joke on them. But it's just man, you know what I did today? Man, I enrolled in auto pay. What? Yo, how did it feel? Like, yo, it felt amazing. You know, and then it's like you talk and then you see like the things that you say over and over again that get a reaction and you're like, okay, well, there's something there. There's something there and that has to stay. Everything else can kind of be reworked.
You know, I've heard different comedians talk about how maybe they'll bring it up, but it feels like bringing it up in conversation is such a specific part of your process. So when was this sort of joke then written? Was it written when you were working on the special? Are you sort of always working on jokes, even sort of when you're maybe focusing more on acting?
Yeah, I mean, I think whenever a funny joke comes, I write it down because I never know what I'm using it for. I don't know if it's a throwaway. I don't know if it's for a script. I don't know if it's for, you know, the stage. I just write it down and I'm like, let's see where we can go from here.
Oh, interesting. All right. So I want to take a closer look at the joke and sort of walk through it. And you can talk to me how things came together, sort of what you like about different parts. So the joke starts with the framing of like, I'm living my best black life, which sort of gets a big applause. Why frame it with that instead of maybe start immediately with sort of the buildup? So like, what did you like about first establishing this idea of, oh, I'm talking about how sort of great my life is right now?
Yeah, because it's kind of just like that moment of like, I'm on this stage, I'm filming my HBO special. This is a big moment for me. I'm on my second movie, I'm writing a book. It's like all the things that are happening. I've just bought my first home. I'm happy. I'm living my best black life. And it's like, yeah. And it's just like the audience. I mean, most people want to see people that they recognize as like growing to celebrate their wins, right? Most people are like for me, I think a lot of my fans look at me like, man, if Yvonne can do it, like I can do it. And which I'm like, heck yeah. Cause I'm no respecter of, like, God is no respecter of a person. Like, yo, if you got a dream, if you know he gave it to you and you're working towards it, like I will see you on the stage soon, like whatever your stage is. And so it's that moment of like, bringing the audience in and having them celebrate this moment with me. And so that's the setup. And then it's just like, man, in addition, like part of living my best black life, I got to do something that like I thought was so unattainable. I thought was so far beyond me. Like I couldn't even, you know, and it's just like, what is it? And so it's like they're prepped to be happy for you. Like now they're like, tell us more. Like we want to know. And then it's like auto pay. They're like, what?
It's like they're like, what? But they're like, yeah, that is great.
Exactly. It's a surprise element of like, that's,
yeah,
she just built us up so high. And you know, and the thing about it, I think that's also what adds to my relatability. You know, it's like for someone it could be like, man, I just did something I didn't think I could be able to do. And it's like, what, man, I rented a private jet. It's like, that's big and that's beautiful and that's like aspirational, but like half the people in your audience are like, when will we ever get to do that? Right. And it's just like, it's not that it's alienating because like, if that's your truth, that's your, I haven't had the chance to do that. If I did, I probably would have said it on stage. But in that moment, it's like, yo, I'm giving you this thing that was so big, but here's the catch. You can do it too. And so, you know, even like the reaction from, you know, online and the tweets and the DMs. It's just like, man, what we received that auto pay blessing, girl. Cause you know, in the joke, I was like, I release the spirit of auto pay. You know, people were like, I receive it. And I think, you know, the relatability of that is that's an attainable goal. It's still a goal, but it's like, yo, when I attain that goal, I can feel good about my accomplishments and where I am. And it's tangible. I just, you know, it may take me a little bit to get there, but I can add that to my vision board as an accomplishment. Because sometimes you do things and you're like, yo, man, I got an OVA. But I think me putting it in the special, it's like, yo, no, that's something to celebrate, bruh.
Yeah. You know, after you say auto pay, there is like this sort of big cheer and you start dancing. And it made me think about, you know, first, a lot of comedians, a lot of their material comes from sort of anger or frustration. And inside the joke, there might have been sort of past versions of frustration. But like the joke is framed from the position of joy. And I think a lot of your comedy is. What is that? What attracts you to having sort of a more joyous persona or coming to that way to your audience?
I mean, for me, I mean, my name means Archer of Happiness. So Yvonne Anguli Adeze Oje means Archer of Happiness, Daughter of a King, Strong Oak. I know that my purpose is to literally shoot and inject joy into the airwaves, whatever that is. And so my framing is one of like, yo, I want when you leave here that you had a good time. You know what I mean? It's not that we won't talk about different things. It's like, no, but we'll talk about different things. But like you said, the framing will be positive because I'm optimistic. You know, even when I talk about dating and it's like, no, I'm single. I'm so happy. Guys, I'm so happy. And it's just like, even if it's a struggle, it's like, but here's what I'm happy about. I'm happy about my growth. I'm happy that I now know what I want. I'm happy that my vision board is updated and I won't settle for less. You know, so it's kind of that like, you can look at the same situation one or two ways. I just choose to look at it through lens of joy and through lens of hope and, you know, the audacity of hope.
Yeah. You. So the joke continues and you sort of have one line then to sort of explain about why it's such a big deal. And you do this phone call and, you know, you say it's on the 12th and you said, just take it then. Which is sort of like set in a sort of different tone than your presenting stand-up. It's much more conversational. Is that partly also just sort of how it evolves in that these jokes are evolving from you talking to people? Sort of how did the phrasing of that moment, the sort of like, just take it then with the little swoop of your arm you do, how did that sort of come together?
Because for me, I was like, that's power. For me, I'm like, yo, the power of that moment is you're talking to somebody and they're like, okay, ma'am, would you like us to put this on auto pay? It's like, oh yeah, yeah. When do you want it? The 12th? Take it. Like, it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's like, whatever date you choose, I'll have it. Like, that is a freedom. That is the luxury. And I say, you know, I was like, auto pay is not for the faint of heart. It's for the gainfully employed. Like, you can't just be willy nilly out here like, yeah, sure, let me check this box. Cause then I talk about the flip side when you unknowingly enroll in auto pay and it's like, I checked the box. No, uncheck it, please. I don't want this life. Like, when you're not ready for it, you don't, it's the last thing that, you know, that you want. Because, you know, for a lot of people who are trying to, you know, make ends meet or trying to just stay afloat, it's like, no, we got to get creative. It's like, we don't want to be delinquent in our bills, but we got to get creative with how we pay our bills. And sometimes we have to prioritize. And, you know, if you talk to any artist at any point, you know, they remember those beginning moments. And it's just like, yo, it was not easy. And so it's like, you know, I want to be an upstanding citizen. I want my name to like mean something. I want my credit score to not be shot. And so it's just like at the same time, like, this wasn't an overextension at the time, but now because of so many events that have happened, like, yo, I'm in over my head and, oh, okay, I really got to get creative. This is where my acting comes into play. It's like, which one is more important? Is it my Sprint bill or is it, you know, like, or do I eat today? Like, what do I need most? Because then, like, if I do get the call that I got the job and my phone's turned off, that's not going to help me. But then if I can't eat three meals a day, that's also not going to help me. So, you know, I feel like the conversation of being able to be like, you want it on the 12th? It doesn't matter to me, because whenever you want it, I got it for you. And that was the, you know, empowerment of that moment.
Mm-hmm. As you're talking about, sort of the internal debate of what can we do? It's how what can we pay for? And in the joke itself, you create a scene of it as sort of a huddle that you have with yourself, opposed to just sort of saying that, instead of explaining to me like you just did, you create a little scene of you huddling with essentially multiple versions of you. It's like a team that's all you. How did you come to sort of framing it that way, opposed to sort of just telling people what it's like? You sort of created this image of multiple yous looking at the charts and being like, oh, I think we can do Chipotle, but not the guac.
Because it was, I remember, you know, when I was like a PA, my roommate and I, we'd always like, oh, you want Chipotle? Because Chipotle was one of those things where, like, you know, if you got like $10, you could get like a meal and you could split it and you can have, it could be lunch and dinner. But then once they start adding the guac, you're like, ah, that's taking me over. Like, nah, chit. Like, you got to sacrifice. You can't be out here trying to eat lavishly, because Chipotle with guac is like lavish eating, when you're like on the grind. And so it's just like, hey, listen, we have to conserve. You're going to get your basic needs met, but let's not get crazy. Let's calm down. And so that's what that huddle is. That huddle is like when you know, like, okay, you're trying to just get over the hump, because you know you got some things coming out. And it was just like, okay, we can put gas, but we're not filling it up. We're getting to our destination and home, okay? Anything else is extra. And so that huddle, that me showing you that kind of conversation that I have with multiple versions of myself, it's like, this is what it took for me to get on this platform, this stage that you see me on, that you're applauding me on, like, without telling you, like, yo, it was real hard. It's like, yo, these are the mental debates that I had with myself. And sometimes, you know, you can look at your favorite celebrity and be like, man, they were overnight success. And it's like, oh, it was a long night, if you think that, you know? And so showing you the process of, the negotiations I had to have, it lets you know that, like, this moment means that much more to me because I remember this other moment.
Yeah. It, you know, in general, throughout the special, you'll set up premises and you'll do scenes or act outs, you know, instead of telling the audience, you'll perform it. In other jokes, it allows you to do a lot of very specific characters, or sometimes it's your family members or sort of people from back home. What do you like about that style? How did that style evolve to be sort of more performative, to be sort of more character oriented?
You know, I think the beauty about, you know, my style of comedy is that, like, I get to use every aspect of me, right? I get to use the Nigerian aspect of me. I get to use the African-American aspect of me. I get to use the performer, actress aspect of me. And then I'm a comedian. So it's really just me being able to be like, I like acting. And I like comedy, and I don't want to have to choose which one I am right now, because I can be both. So in this moment, I'm going to X, Y, and Z. And so, you know, when we went to Nigeria to do the woman on the street segment, I didn't know what they would say. Like, that wasn't scripted at all. And so.
Oh, really?
No, it wasn't.
You didn't go in with a plan? You just sort of like walking around?
I knew that, for instance, like with the directions bit, that came from me asking directions of like Nigerians in America and just being like, they don't know how to get anywhere. So then it was like, I wonder if Nigerians in Nigeria do the same thing. And it was just like, let's ask some people. And I was just like, you can't even make this up. They do the same thing. It's like, it doesn't matter where they are. It doesn't matter if they've lived in America for so long. It's like, they are still Nigerian at heart. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I was like, oh, you know, I knew that going to Nigeria, I wanted to highlight some things that I would say on stage, as well as like talk to my parents. And, you know, just because the punctuation of those clips, I was like, man, it kind of brought it to life. Like, it's one thing to hear me say it, and then it's another thing to, like, see it.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of just like kind of put the exclamation point on, so, like to hit home on some of the bits.
If you asked a Nigerian for directions to the theater tonight, it would be the most frustrating experience of your life. You would still be on your way here, okay? You'd be like, excuse me, can you please tell me how to get to the Howard Theater? Here they go. Howard Theater. Howard Theater. So what is this move? It's your GPS. What's going on, sir? Howard Theater. Okay, here's what you want to do. You want to go all the way down. Just go down, 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 down. Eh? All the way to the end of the road. At the end of the street, you will see a stop sign. At that stop sign, stop.
Excuse me. Hi. Please, do you know Obalade?
Obalende.
Obalende, yes. How do I get to Obalende?
I don't really know most of the names of the place.
You go straight down, you turn right, then you turn left, and then afterwards you just keep on going.
So there's many rights and lefts?
Yeah, pretty much.
When you get to the bus stop, then I will stop.
When I get to the bus stop, I will stop.
I will mention on that moment, when you talk about how they give directions and then you have them do exactly what, I couldn't believe it. The fact, I was like, maybe she went there and then reverse engineered. Like, as a person who thinks about this stuff, I was going to ask you about it because it was fascinating. It was like, either she planned this, reverse engineered, or she truly is like, I guess it's correct, which is sort of you, it's an observation of like, they talk like this, and to get people to actually say that is, you know, there's been a lot of documentary footage and specials recently, but nothing where it was like, literally like people talk like this and then you have a person talking like that. It was, I imagine in that moment when it happened, were you like, oh, this is great?
Oh yeah, it was perfect. Cause I was just like, I really was like, wow. He literally said my joke verbatim. Like I can't like, and I had that joke before. And that was the crazy thing. It's like, I've had that joke. And then he was like, and then when you get to the stop sign, man, you stop. And I was like, he did not. I was like, did we get it? Like in my mind, I was like, please tell me we got it. Like just cause, you know, we were filming on the street. It was like high. It was a tight space. We had two cameras going. I was like, it better be clear that there better be no out of focusness. Did we get that? Like it was like a moment of triumph. And it was just also like a moment of like, man, I love my people. We can't be helped. It was just like, we can't help ourselves. I think my favorite part was like the little kids who were just like, no, we use Google Maps. I was like, oh, look at the generational gap.
It was like they truly like wrote the tag. It's if you wrote the joke out again, you'd be like, and then a little kid would be like, we just use Google Maps.
I loved it. I was like, yo, this is our generation. And I quizzed him. I was like, so you don't even know. He was like, no, you can just put it in your phone. And I was like, you know what? I'm not mad at you, kid, because that would have been my answer. And I, you know what?
Yeah.
Tell your dad to do that next time, because he got me lost. Mm-hmm. You know, like your dad got me lost.
So the joke continues. And so the last sort of big part is to have this rebuke of overdraft fees. How did that come to you? It's an interesting move to give that audience. You address the audience directly, and you, as a sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, but you sort of rebuke this for generations that they don't have this problem.
Well, yeah, because here's the thing. So I start off saying like overdraft fees are the trick of the enemy. And, mm-hmm. you know, and then when I give the rebuke, it's because the reality is, if you think about the system, right, you are, you know, you have $1 less or even 60 cents less than what the vendor or the merchant was taking out. Your bank floats you the 60 cents and then charges you $32 or $35. You're like, hold up, what sense does that make? Like, if I didn't have the 60 cents, now, like, I'm in debt to you $35. Like, why am I not in debt to you the 60 cents? Like, can I just make up to you what I didn't have, you know?
Yeah.
Or, like, just don't let it go through, you know, like, whatever. Like, just don't let, like, whatever it is. But then, and then, like, God forbid you had two things coming or three things coming out at the same time. And, you know, you're short. So now you're, like, 35 times three. And it's like, that's such a system. I mean, we accept it because you're like, well, that's just how the banks are. But it's just like, yo, that's a system of I don't know if oppression is the word, but it's definitely not a system to help people out of debt that are already very close to the debt line. You know what I mean? So it's just like, this is whack. And systematically, this is whack. And the people that it affects the most, it can be crippling. And because then you're like, if I do get a check, instead of me starting at like a good level, I'm starting at a deficit because now I got to pay my debts like a Lannister, you know, to the banks, and now I'm short again. So it's like this cycle of poverty, to be honest. It's like continuing the cycle of poverty. And so that rebuke was me like, yo, I rebuke the overdraft fees. I rebuke it because it's like, nah, from your children, like they will know the blessing of never having, you know, they will know the blessing of auto pay because that means that's one less thing they have to worry about. You know, and it's, you know, a lot of my audience, especially in that moment were African Americans. And it's like, that's one less thing they have to worry about as young Black kids. They can just start at, not at a deficit, but they can start above, you know, in life. Yes to this. And I think the audience were like, no, we received that. We received that because, you know, it's a setback.
Mm-hmm. So the joke ends with you bringing it up with dating. You say, you know, you should ask if they have auto pay. Was that always there? Was that partly to sort of then you transition to dating material? Was it more like I need something sort of connect these two things?
No, you know, that was a tag that I kind of made up on the spot.
Oh, wow.
Because I was like, in my mind thinking like, yo, it's funny. I mean, obviously I know where my set is going, but I just was like, oh, this transition. It was just like, oh, you know what? Back in the day, they could be like, girl, you better find out what his credit score is. And I'm like, bum that. Like, credit score is one thing, but like, bro, are you on auto pay? Like, how confident are you in your finances? You know, because like, if you're confident in your finances, then hopefully your credit score will match that level of confidence in your bill paying, suaveness.
In general, when you're putting it all together, and you've talked about how it was a pretty short timeline to sort of make it a thing between different projects you had, how do you think about how these things are ordered? How do you sort of approach it as a single set?
Yeah, well, for me, I knew that the beginning, like I kind of wanted to move from like getting to know me. So like, this is me, this is my world, this is the Nigerian-ness of it. Like before I go into other aspects of me, I got to lay the foundation with like who I am and what this means so that you can understand my perspective on all these other jokes, right? So it was very much like, let me introduce you to my world. And then it was like, this is what Nigerians do. This is my purview and my perspective being both Nigerian and American. And so I'm going to look at things, you know, with this kind of bird's eye view, even if it's like what it looks like for us to play taboo, what it looks like, you know, for Nigerians with education and like why, you know, specifically that group of people are so like gung-ho with being doctors, lawyers, and engineers. Cause like my mama won't even let me play with somebody who doesn't make straight A's, you know, and it's like, and we're only in third grade. So it's just kind of like giving you a little bit of like insight into, you know, like Herman's Head. Back in the day, there was that show, but like giving a little bit of insight into my world. And then I'm like, all right, now let's have some fun. You know, it's hopefully it's fun all the way, but it's just like education over. Now let's apply everything we just learned to like playing games with different groups of people, going on dates, you know, making a vision board. And then I knew that like, the setup of like haggling in the beginning was like my callback to, you know, like if I got kidnapped and my parent, and knowing that like I would end my set with being, you know, the single woman and what that looks like culturally, you know, spiritually, et cetera. And then knowing that like I would take you from one place that you thought I left you and apply it back to this other thing, because the reality is I can't stop being all of these things that I just told you I was.
Yeah. You know, we talked about it before, which is part of that is you mix in this documentary footage of you visiting your family in France and Nigeria. You explain at the top of the special why you wanted to do this, which is there's sort of no way I could do a special about my life without showing you my life. And I wanted to ask a little bit more about that. You know, what do you think it does for the home audience? You know, what does it offer them? But sort of even beyond that is like, you know, why did you want the audience, like, why do you want the audience to know more of you? You know, why what about yourself as an artist? You're like, there's a deeper understanding they can get if I do this. And why was that important for you?
You know, I think that most comedians, you can tell like what you're going to get from a Dave Chappelle. Actually, maybe you can't ever tell what you're going to get from a Dave Chappelle show, but you know that you're going to get brilliance. You know, I just watched his 8:46 that came out and it was so impassioned. I don't even know if we can call it a comedy special. I think it's like an extended TED Talk, a very necessary, but it's exactly what we needed. But you know that Dave is going to see the world from like turning it on its head. Like you've had enough experience with him to know that he has this very like incredibly dark, but also like funny sense of humor. And thoughtful, not even dark, but like inquisitive. He'll make you think. He's never going to give you a joke like open-handed. You're going to have to like come up to his level. You know that, you know, Trevor Noah is going to like apply being South African as well as being like understanding the political movements of, you know, both in South Africa and in America. So you like you know without a comic letting you know that they're teaching you about them, you are learning about them with every show you go to. And so for me, I recognize that a lot of people came to know me through a character I play, Molly on Insecure. But I was doing comedy long before I was Molly. And so this was kind of me having to reintroduce a fan base who didn't know me as this. And so before I get into my groove, it's like when you come to school the first day and you're like, hey, class, you know, we're going to take a roll. By the way, my name is Professor Orji. A couple of things to know about me. Your syllabus is here. We're going to get quizzed on the 13th. And any questions? Great. And now we can get into the lesson plan, right? And so it was kind of like that way of me saying like, yo, this is who I am. This is who Yvonne is. And I know you love Molly, maybe not this season, but you rock with Yvonne. Yvonne is pretty dope in her own way. Let me show you. And that was, but at the same time, it's like going back home and showing my parents, that was my way of being like, I'm going to have the mic for an hour. I know that. You all don't get the opportunity to have a say. You know, you just listen to me and you may shake your head like, that's not true, you know, or like, you know, or I have an issue with that or whatever. So I'm like, let me give my parents the time that they deserve to air their grievances, to co-sign or not. And those were some of the most special moments for me in this project, because it was like, yo, I get to show the world like who I am through my parents, because they helped make me this way. And, you know, for the most part, we all have whatever relationship we have with our parents, whether it's tumultuous or whether it's loving or whether it's tender or whether there are moments of like highs and lows. And it's like, yeah, that's also relatable. No, across seven seas and all the continents, you understand these moments that I'm having with my parents and they're having with me.
Mm-hmm. We'll be right back with more Yvonne Orji.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Most weight loss programs focus on restriction and inflexible routine, which is why most diets fail. But Noom isn't a diet. It's a weight management program that uses psychology and biology to help you develop healthy, sustainable habits. Noom believes that weight loss starts with the brain, and their daily lessons are tailored to help users understand the science behind food cravings and eating choices. Whether you want to lose weight, increase physical activity, meet a health goal, or simply change the way you think about food, Noom can help you build healthy habits while still enjoying your favorite foods. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com and check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
And we're back with Yvonne Orji. You know, this is an audio medium, but I want to talk for a second about the visuals of the special. Specifically, I often complain about stand-up special sets, but your set, I loved. It was clearly African-inspired. And then there's, of course, your outfit, which is everything. And I think I heard you talk about even you went as far as hiring an African graphic designer to make your fonts.
Yeah.
I wanted you to talk about why and sort of how you came to those decisions, but also what do things like this, what do those visual elements, your outfit and the set, do in sort of helping you communicate who you are as we were talking about? How do those elements help in the sort of big picture of you're going to get who Yvonne is?
Yeah, no, for sure. Like for me, I think if I wasn't doing comedy, if I wasn't doing acting, I probably would be a marketer because I know when I've been marketed to, and I'm like, oh God, yeah, they got me. I'm in the grocery store buying these chips that I don't need, but I got to taste it. They fuse two different flavors together. I got to try it. You know, and it's just like, I saw the commercial for it. And for me, so visually, the aesthetics, like I know when I'm like, you know, when it's like, don't judge a book by its cover. I'm like, nah, I do. Cause I'm like, this is, does it look good? I'll take it, you know, and I'll open the first page. It could be trash, but I'm like, yo, but this cover is great. And so for me, I watched a lot of specials before I went into production on my own. And I just was like, yeah, I don't want to do like just a curtain. No, I don't want to do, you know, I'm like, oh, I want to feel like everything is part of something else. Like if we're talking Africa, I want to feel like even the set reminds me of Africa without like, you know, a caricature of it. Cause then there's also like, well, what is Africa? You know what I mean? Like, what is that? And so when I took the trip home to Nigeria, so before we actually went on the trip, I like looked at some of my favorite like photographers or, you know, like just people that I knew captured like African faces, feels, countries. Like I would go on their Instagram just for inspiration. And I knew I wanted something vibrant, et cetera. But it wasn't until I went to Nigeria and I saw this restaurant. It's called Alara. And I loved it's like a high end like shop, but it's also like an art exhibit. So it's and then mm-hmm. it's a restaurant at the back. So it's like a beautiful mezcla. You can like spend the whole day there. And I saw the entryway is this red gate, and it was like it's iron on top of iron. And I was just like, it made like a square design. And I was like, yo, man, I love that. I love the iron. I love the hard. Because I'm a tomboy by nature. I grew up with three older brothers. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I love the steel hard nature of this, but I also love the pattern. And so the designer, Tom, he was phenomenal. And I sent him a picture, but I was like, how do we make it our own? And he was wise enough to be like, well, let's take the inspiration and create a different pattern. And then where you will actually be, because the stage is large, but where the camera will actually focus, let that be where the design like interfaces and intersects, because that's what you're going to see the most on screen. And he was right. And what I love about HBO is that they respected the vision, because I didn't realize how expensive backdrops were. I didn't. I just was like, I want that. And, you know, obviously we have budgets. And they were like, well, to have that made, it's going to be X amount of thousands of dollars. And I was like, huh? What? I was like, don't we know anybody like in a like a wielding shop or something? Like, like, how can we make this, you know, work? And so then there was this notion of like, well, can we put it on a sheet and then just, you know, put a picture on a sheet and print it out? And if you know me, I'm super anal in a lot of different ways and very specific. Mm-hmm. And I was like, will we be able to get light through that though? Because I want it to be able to shine through and really have like the 3D effect. And they were like, well, no, because the sheet is just, it is like the light has to be on the sheet already. And I was like, I don't like this. I was like, I already don't like this. And so it was like a thing that by the grace of God, they went back to HBO. HBO gave us leeway in the budget to make it happen. Because I was like, I, again, my thought was like, if I only get one of these, hopefully I'll get more, but if I only get one of these, I want it to be done as excellently and perfectly as possible. If this is my one shot. And so that's how the stage came about. Cause I was like, you know, what says Africa? I don't know, but like this pattern said to me strength and said to me, you know, different. And then I was just like, again, I'm very specific. I had the theme song created by an artist named Midlo because I always like to come out on stage with high energy. And, you know, most of the songs I like, one of the songs I used on tour was T.I. and Jay-Z's Bring 'Em Out, to which I was, you know, graciously told, whose budget is going to pay for that? And I was like, you're not wrong. And so, you know, Swizz Beatz, you know, was one of those producers that I loved that had like the upbeat songs and he just made you want to dance. And I was like, I need like a Swizz Beatz hype kind of song. And Midlo and this producer, Mike Bombs, they created the My Mind Made It theme song. And HBO was like, great, we can use that. And because I knew, because I told Chris Robinson, our director, that I wanted to actually make a music video when I came out. And he does music videos for Drake and Chris Brown and everybody. I was like, HBO thinks you're getting a comedy special, but it's really a documentary, music video, and comedy special. And then for me, my outfit is always something that I am very, very specific about. I did a like 13 city tour before we actually shot the special. And every city was different. I knew that I liked black. I knew that I wanted like, you know, either shorts or if I'm doing heels, then it's boots. Or if I do sneakers, then it's like these like iridescent, whatever it is, it has to make a statement. And every comedian, every black comedian pays homage to Eddie Murphy's Delirious red jumpsuit.
Yeah.
It's like a leather, it's like a moment. It was a fashion moment. It was a comedy moment. It was iconic. And I was like, well, I'm not doing red. But I was like, I will get Laurence Boss, who's Guinea-Bissau. So I was like, let me get as many Africans as possible to further this vision. Cause for me, it's like, if I win, we all win. So who can I pull up at the same time? Cause I don't ever enter something not believing it's not going to be a moment. I'm like, no, if I do something, I want to do it so well that it becomes a moment. And Laurence literally created that outfit overnight, flew it from LA to DC, landed it to me at 3:45, got on a 5 p.m. plane back to LA, and I hit the stage at 7 o'clock. Like, it was a crunch time, final hour situation. And I would always say, even if my jokes bomb, my outfit better be the bomb. So that's my thing. It's like, hopefully these jokes make it, but if they bomb, my outfit is going to be tight though.
So you've told the story of how you started doing comedy in almost every interview you've done. It's one of the great comedy sort of origin stories, which is it was 2006. You were asked to enter a Miss Nigeria in America pageant. Last minute, you're asked, what's your talent going to be? You didn't have a talent. I'll let you tell the next part of it. So then what happens?
So I didn't have a talent. And so I prayed because at that point I had, you know, I was 20, maybe like 22 at this point. And I became a born again Christian in college freshman year when I was 17. So I'd, you know, been developing this like relationship with God. And this was probably one of the first times that like he was making a demand on me in a way that I was like, mm-hmm. oh, I gotta listen to him. Also, like I can't just like pray and like like let go. Like he wants me to do something that's uncomfortable. Wait, I didn't realize that's how this relationship was gonna work. So anyway, I prayed and I heard Holy Spirit say, do comedy. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, no, like that's not even a thing that I wanted. Yeah. Like, not how? That's not even a thing I know to do. Also, am I funny? I don't want to find out. Like, it was, there were so many question marks that came up with that one comment that I was like, immediately I knew this has to be God because I wouldn't be fighting it so much. Because if it was like me, I'd be like, let's do it. But because I was like, this is definitely not me. We are not. Hold on. Hey, guys, let's another team huddle, guys. God has gone crazy. I don't know where he went, but he's clearly out to lunch. And I heard Holy Spirit say, well, what else do you have? And it was in that moment where I'm like, I hate my back being up against the wall. I hate not having any options. I do, because I'm just like, you know, as a Nigerian woman, I'm so resourceful. It's like, you know, like you saw in the market scene. It's just like, okay, you know, we'll figure it out. Like all of those people are entrepreneurs. All of those people in the market, like they are creating. And so for me, I'm like, this is my heritage. Like I will always have an answer. And in that moment, I was like, oh, I don't have an answer. Like I don't even have anything to battle God with. And I knew like, girl, if you say you go to Bible study in church like you do, what's the point if you're not going to listen to him? And I was like, ah, you're right. And so I just said, yeah. And I started writing down what I thought was funny growing up with this dual lens as a Nigerian and American. I mean, my audience there was very Nigerian. So I was like, well, this is a sweet spot. And then I was like, well, this is not real because I can't just perform to only Nigerians. Like I'm in America. There are more Americans than Nigerians. And then I entered the DC's funniest college student competition because I was getting my master's at the time. And then I ended up winning for GW, which was definitely not a Nigerian audience. And I was like, well, okay, God, wait, one more test. And it was just like, what else do I have to do to tell you, like, this is what I want you to do? But it was just so foreign to me. And it felt so different than anything I could have ever imagined that I really was like, I need assurance that I heard right. Because at that point, like, it was kind of fun getting the feedback. It was kind of fun, like, having the audience, like, laugh at something I said. So it was like, I was kind of getting addicted to that. And then I was like, no, but what if this isn't what I'm supposed to do? And then it turned out it was.
You know, I've spoken to a lot of comedians, some who may or may not be religious, but I think, you know, a lot of them would admit to a certain sort of spiritual feeling that comes from performing stand-up, that comes from the connection to the audience. You know, you clearly are getting and giving a lot of energy when you perform. At this point, does it feel spiritual for you? Would you characterize it that way?
You know, there is an out-of-body experience that happens. Like, before I jump on the stage, I'm a hot mess. Like, my nerves are shot. Like, I still get nervous. I'm like, is there a way I can back out? And then there's something about when I hear my name called, it's like, no, boo, this is showtime. This is your moment. Like, anything else you... Like, it really is an out-of-body experience. Like, I remember opening for Chris Rock on his Total Blackout tour. And we did Atlanta. We did New York. We did the Madison Square Garden Theater as well as the Dolby Theater. And then we did Barclays Center. Now, Barclays was the last show I did for him. All the other show, like Atlanta, I definitely was like, this is my moment. I don't know if I'll get another one because like we hadn't gotten the other dates yet. And so I was like, I got to make Atlanta great. And then he called me to do the LA and New York shows. And again, it was like, oh my God, this is where the Oscars is at. So it was like the gravity of the moment was like, poof. And I, you know, I felt like every night, like, you know, this night was better than the other. I don't know. Something about 16,000 people watching me, that was my best performance. I have no idea. Like, that should have been the one I was the most nervous at. But it was something about like, everything else was practiced to get you to this moment. You bet not mess up. And it was like, yes, self, yes, self. And I got off the stage and it felt like I was never even on that stage. It felt like somebody took over. And that's what it felt like. You know, I did two tapes for the comedy special. What people don't know, I had those boots on. I had sprained my leg. I had sprained my leg like during my tour. And so after like the 7 o'clock show, I'm like hurting, but I'm like, you never let them see you sweat, Yvonne. And I'm trying to be focused. I'm nervous because I'm like, there's so many lights and then there's like 13 cameras. So, you know, it's like, it's my first special like this. So I'm just like, oh my gosh, there's so much going on. That the 7 o'clock show, I was like, this can't be the special. No. And then I remember like, yo, you got one more shot. This is what you, you sold everybody on this dream. You got one more shot to get right. They went back. My ankle was getting swollen. They wrapped me up in tape. I put some Biofreeze on, put those boots back on. And I was like, for the next 60 minutes, you are not in pain. You are not going to mess up. You're going to give them a show. And it was like, that was, and I got off the stage after the second show and I was like, oh yeah, that's my special, guys. That's my, like, I was so pumped because it was like, I literally, again, the same feeling of being at Barclays and like feeling like something came over me. It was confidence, but it was also like, I knew like my faith was like kicking in. Like Holy Spirit was like, we didn't come this far just to get this far, boo. We got work to do.
Yeah. You know, the special, it's called Mama, I Made It. And, you know, there is something of, as you mentioned, that sort of it's a proof that, you know, when God said do comedy and push you sort of in that direction, for you, there was like, well, this is what it worked. It, you know, you made it. You're correct to be sort of pushed in this direction. You know, looking back at this journey, do you think about, one, why was it right for you? And also, but why were you the right person to be pushed in this journey?
Man, that is a question. That is, you are flowing in the spirit, brother. You know, it's so interesting because I think that God puts purposes on people before they know it, right? It's kind of like, and I don't know if your listeners like are Bible people, but like the story of Gideon, right? It's like, the angel comes to Gideon and calls him a mighty warrior. And Gideon's like, what are you talking about? Mighty warrior. I am the lowest and the least. Okay. The clan, we have been getting beat up. It's not me. I think you got the wrong one, bro. And it's in that moment that Gideon's like, what is happening? Me? And I heard T.D. Jakes said Gideon had been praying for who God called him to be. Like he was the answer to the prayer that he was praying. And he didn't know that. He was just like, please don't do this to me. Please don't make me the answer. Like, can you send somebody else? And so many times, like, it's so funny that I was born holding my mom's IUD in my hand. So technically, I wasn't even supposed to be here. My mom was like, I'm done. Yeah. And then it's like, I come out, I'm holding the IUD. Then they name me Archer of Happiness. And then they're like, and then for like, 20 years of my life, they believe I'm going to be a doctor. But then God is like, I'm going to make you a healer, but not through a scalpel, but through humor. And it's so crazy because I'm like, what, me? A-hole me? You know, really, like, I got to be like, you, me? You thought this much about my life that you literally made me the answer for something. And then even for the special to be coming out in such a time as this, where there's so much upheaval, there is a need for a moment of Black joy because Black bodies have been so oppressed. There's so much in the history of this country and just the upheaval that's happening. And God's like, yeah. So in this moment where you think this might be the worst time for your special to come out, I'm going to actually make it the best time. And it's like, oh, I apologize for ever thinking I know more than you. I'm sorry. You know? And so when you say why me, it's still me fulfilling the purpose and not just like, hey guys, let me make you laugh, but like, hey guys, let me bring a moment of healing. We are hurting. Mm-hmm. And if in this moment we can all take a collective time out to be like, there is still joy that exists within our suffering. There is still hope that exists within our suffering. There is still progress that can happen. And there is still celebrations that we will have despite what the world may tell us that we can't have. And so to your question, it's like, I'm not questioning anymore. Like, I question because mm-hmm. I'm in awe, but I also know, like, if this is my portion and if this is my job, I got a job to do.
I'm getting emotional. I was like crying 1 second. So that sound means it's time for our final segment, which is a laughing round. It's like a lightning round, but because it's comedy, it's a laughing round. So they're shorter questions, lighter questions, I promise you. Do you have a favorite joke, like a street joke?
A favorite joke? Chris Rock, when he says, excuse me, I was wondering, is it possible? It gets me every time.
Yeah. Do you have a joke that you kept on trying but never worked? But you think maybe the audience was wrong and you'll always think it's funny. You'll think your entire life when you stop trying it.
Man, if I did, I have taken it out of my memory. Actually, no, wait. There was a joke that I thought was funny and it was not. And I actually used it one time at a request from a friend and the audience let me know, like, no. And I was like, you lied to me. She's like, I thought it was funny. I was like, So never again. I won't use that joke again. The audience.
Oh,
was
you
like,
won't even say what it is right now.
No.
Not at all. At the top of the season of Insecure, my colleague Hunter Harris ranked every man on Insecure. For those who haven't read it, number one was Thug Yoda. Number two was Jared. Number three was Andrew. And in last place, beyond Scott Foley as a slave owner on Due North, was Dro. Did you see this list? What do you think about? What did you think about it? What do you think about it?
I thought this list was comic gold at its finest. I was just like, who is this magical human that has gone through the trouble of ranking all of them? And I love that she had criteria and then was like, let me go back on this one criteria because also we had this one guy in the scene. I saw the list. I think Thug Yoda is perfect because Thug Yoda as number one, he's been consistent throughout all four seasons. He is like, I think this of Issa. I'm not afraid to be myself. I will never use C-words. He's great.
And how do you feel about Dro being last place?
Dro should be in the last place. He was trash. Dro should definitely be in the last place. I agree. She gets the award for getting it right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. She'll be very pleased to hear that. This is the last question, which is barely a question, which is this interview is taking place before the finale of Insecure has aired, but the interview will come out after it has aired. So without telling me what happens, what is your answer to how you felt about what you learned, what happens? Does that make sense?
Sort of. Wait, what? I feel like this is like a reverse psychology. I'm trying to tell you what happened.
Yeah. So let me try to explain it again. So this interview, as you know, is happening before the finale airs and press has not seen it, but the interview will come out after the finale has aired. So everyone listening will have watched the finale. So to those people, these future us, what do you want to say about the finale? What would your reaction to be? What do you feel like you want to communicate to these people?
I will say we needed everything to happen this season in order to get us to this moment.
Perfect. Perfect. That is a perfect ending to this. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your answers. This was fantastic.
No, thank you. This was an enjoyable one. God bless you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
That's it for another episode of Good One. This episode's clip was courtesy of HBO. You can watch Mama, I Made It and Insecure on HBO and HBO Max. Follow Avon on social media at Avon Orgy. Good One is produced by myself, Jelani Carter, Art Chung, and Camila Salazar. Gautam Srikishan did our theme song. Write a review and rate the show on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, please. Email any comments, questions, or laughing round suggestions to goodonepodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at goodonepodcast. I'm Jesse David Fox, and you can follow me at Jesse David Fox. Good One is a production of Vulture and the Vox Media Podcast Network. We'll be back next week with Hasan Minhaj. Have a good one.
Why do you run? Why does anyone?
I always thought that runners loved running, and that's not the case. Most runners hate running, but they choose to do it.
In the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers learns why women runners everywhere are driven to go the distance.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
Team Milk is about fueling women's performance and helping them along their marathon journeys. You can sign up now for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon taking place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. Learn more and register at everywomansmarathon.com.